Yes, hello, good day. You are tuned into Warning Shots here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. And I'm your host, Scott Price. Today is January the 25th. 2013. On today's episode of Warning Shots, we will be taking a look at the situation in Mali. Kind of talking about the overall context there, which I've talked about in past episodes, as well as Canada's involvement and sort of the shift in Canadian foreign policy, or what some people refer to as a shift in Canadian foreign policy since Canada's involvement in Afghanistan and more recently in Libya and now Mali. So I'll be talking with Derek O'Keefe, who is the editor of Rabble.ca. He's also a writer and a social justice advocate, activist. So he will be on later on in the show. So he will be on live. So do stay tuned for that. Look forward to talking with Derek. Now, as always, there's first, I always like to make a couple of announcements before we get into your international news in brief. So there are many locally produced spoken word shows that cover current events in an engaging and in-depth manner on CKW 95.9 FM, People of Interest, Mud and Water, Inner City Voices, Black Mass, Say It Sista, and the Global Research News Hour. So all those things can be found, showtime, free show archives at ckw.ca. It's a great resource that we have there for you, free archives, information about what's going on at the station, more information if you want to get involved. It's all there. As well, check out ckwnews.ca for featured stories and interviews from people of interest and Warning Shots. So that's all that. Now, as I always say at the top of the show, CKW is an alternative listener-driven media source. We take listener-driven very seriously. That means that not only are you supporting us right now by listening, but we also rely on your donations every February during Fund Drive, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. So later on in the show, if you want to pre-pledge or whatever, I will kind of leave the line open for you to do that if you want to do that, as I usually do more recently, is giving time for people to phone in with questions, comments, and concerns. So that time will also be for if you want to pre-pledge, kind of get it out of the way and all that kind of stuff. Now, so the phone number for that will be 204-774-6877. Of course, that'll be later on in the show because I'll have Derek O'Keefe on the line. Now, for other ways of getting hold of me, there's an email, warningshots.ckuw959@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at warningshots. Kind of, if you want to tweet me during the show, you can do that as well. I also encourage you to follow CKUW on Twitter, as it's a great resource of knowing what is going on at this fine station here in Winnipeg, about all the little things we got going on. So that's always very important. So that's all of sort of the housekeeping announcements I like to do at the start of the show. Now let's take a look at some of the news happening around the world right now. Here is your international news in brief. Weekly news update on the Americas reports. Mexican drug war victims movement calls for more U.S. gun control. On January the 14th, Mexican poet and human rights activist Javier Cecilia, a Mexican political scientist Ciego Agua Cascada, brought the U.S. Embassy in Mexico City a letter signed by over 54,000 people calling on U.S. President Barack Obama and other officials to stop the flow of smuggled firearms from the U.S. to Mexico. "Our country is bleeding to death," the letter read, referring to the violence that followed the militarization of the war on drugs by former President Felipe Calderon. More than 60,000 Mexicans were murdered during the Calderon administration. In the first month of the current president, Enrique Peña Nieto, 755 people were killed. The majority of them died from wounds caused by weapons obtained in the U.S. The signers asked for the U.S. government to enforce its existing prohibition on the export of assault weapons to Mexico, to expand the current mandate for the reporting of sales of assault weapons in the U.S. border states, and to improve the analysis of arms trafficking routes and other available information, including arms identified in criminal complaints and in the government's weapons databases, to help identify arms vendors who supply smugglers. AllAfrica.com reports urban refugees in Kenya, threatened with relocation to overcrowded refugee camps, are breathing a sigh of relief following a high court ruling that was previously halted the move. On December the 18th, 2012, Kenya's Department of Refugees Affairs announced that all refugees should leave urban areas and move to refugee camps. The northeastern Dada complex for Somali refugees and the northeastern and another camp in the northwestern area for others. It further ordered an immediate stop to the registration of refugees in urban areas. The directive was in response to a number of grenade attacks that have occurred in urban areas following Kenya's invasion of Somalia in October 2011. The attacks have been widely blamed on the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab, although the group has not claimed responsibility. The government was due to begin the relocation of an estimated 100,000 urban refugees to camps on the 21st of January, but a ruling on the 23rd of January halted the government's plan until the 4th of February, when a petition against the directive came about. And finally, and our final news brief of today, Reuters Canada reports European countries urged their nationals to leave the eastern Libyan city of Benghazi on Thursday, with Britain citing a specific and imminent threat to Westerners days after a deadly attack by Islamic militants in the neighboring Algeria. Officials declined to give details, but Britain has warned of a growing militant threat in North Africa, which Prime Minister David Cameron has called a magnet for jihadists. The call to leave Libya's second-largest city irked Libyans keen to win foreign investment to rebuild their fractured infrastructure and boost their oil industry after the revolution which toppled Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. With few Westerners are actually believed to be in Benghazi, which was experienced a wave of violence against diplomats as well as military and police officers, including an attack in September that killed the U.S. ambassador and three other Americans. A British embassy spokeswoman in Tripoli said the number of Britons in Benghazi was small, without giving further details. And that is just some of the news happening around the world right now. Do stay tuned. We will get Derek O'Keefe from Rabble.ca on the line to talk a bit about Mali in a little bit. But first, what I'm going to do is we're going to go for a little break. What you're going to hear actually is an interview that Robert Fisk gave to the CBC just a couple of days ago. Now this this interview was done on Evan Solomon's show, Power and Politics. If you don't know Robert Fisk, he's a very famous journalist in the who has covered the Middle Eastern and kind of North African region for a long time, noted author, journalist. So here's him talking about to Evan Solomon on CBC about the situation in Mali. Make some interesting points. So kind of give you guys a bit of an introduction into our discussion, which will be happening in a little bit with Derek O'Keefe. But here is Robert Fisk on CBC. Here is noted journalist and author Robert Fisk on CBC talking with Evan Solomon about the situation in Mali.
You know, I called up an old colleague of mine, journalist, former French Foreign Legionnaire, and I said, what on earth is going on in Mali? What is actually happening? And he said, very frankly, he said, look, the problem in Mali has been there for 30 years. It is a kind of civil war because the people in the north, Arabophone, Berber, Tuareg, refuse to be ruled by a black government in the south. That's the problem, he said. The Islamist thing is a veil on top of that. But at the end of the day, this is a civil conflict. And I noticed 2 days ago, human rights groups were reporting that the Malian army were executing Arabs in newly liberated cities. So our allies, the Malian army, supported by the French and by, you know, one Canadian plane and so on, are now executing people. That's a very dodgy situation for the French to get into, the civil war.
And I think the caution has been the human rights violations on the part of the Malinese army.
Exactly.
I understand that. Yeah. But nonetheless, maybe there's also a more dramatic issue, some argue, a more pressing issue with what's happening in the north. Now, let me show you what Robert Fowler, the former Canadian diplomat, remember, he was kidnapped by the very people who are controlling northern Mali. Yeah, yeah. He was held, first kidnapped, by the way, in Niger, a neighboring country. The border is almost invisible anyway. He was held in Mali. He is now saying that Canada has an obligation for a number of reasons to go in. One, because it will be an Al-Qaeda front. Two, because the weapons that the Islamists in the north are using come from Libya, and Canada was involved in that conflict. And because we've had a long-standing involvement there. Here's what he had to say.
Well, the UN Resolution 2085 of 20 December lays out a menu of what is needed. And it urges all member states to belly up and contribute to that laundry list of requirements. The Malian army needs training. Now, that's not going to be done quickly. It's a very long process.
He argues you got to train them, you got to get involved, or that whole swath of West Africa becomes, he said, it's not even a question, the next front of the war on terror, so to speak, the Al-Qaeda. What's your view on that?
I don't believe in the war on terror. Look, the problem with all these wars is, first of all, Al-Qaeda want us to get involved. They want us to lose, as we lost in Iraq and as we are losing in Afghanistan. And the French will lose again in Mali. You know, once you start putting Western troops into places which they don't own, which is not their land, it will always come to grief. At the end of the day, two questions come up. Do you go to war always for moral reasons? Do you, or is it national interest? National interest and the moral reasons. I can think of many places in the world where, in a perfect world, we should send UN troops, blue helmets, the West Bank and Gaza may be one of them, but certainly Mali, and I can see many other places in Africa and quite a lot of other places in the Middle East, Syria being an obvious example, but we don't go in. Why are we not going into Syria? Answer, because we're supporting the rebels there, some of whom are Islamists, against the government, but we want to go into Mali to support the government against the Islamists.
But you know,
there's a problem there, isn't there? There's a problem there.
I appreciate that. But you and I both know it would be naive to expect a kind of consistency on intervention. But there is always a struggle between responsibility to protect, we know that UN phrase, which is the moral side, and the national interest side, which is how, in this case, how do you find the balance, or what's the proper response?
I'm still not sure what the French national interest is, but you know, you touch perfectly on the problem. You talked about intervention, but what you mean is war. Al-Qaeda want us to fight them, and we're going to do that, which is what they want us to do. Is it wise? I mean, intervention is lovely. I mean, we'd all like intervention. We should have intervened at Munich to protect Czechoslovakia. Here we go. We're talking about World War II. It's very easy to do. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is that intervention is a very partial issue. It's like war criminals. The Middle East is full of them. But the war criminals who end up in The Hague are not all of the war criminals. There's the problem.
But in the imperfect world, what's the response?
The response has got to be that you don't go to war unless you know what you're doing. When I heard the French foreign minister announcing that this would be several weeks, I thought, this man has no idea what war is. I think the big problem we all suffer from at the moment, us too, is that most of our leaders, all of our leaders, including your own prime minister, have never been in a war. For most of my young life, all our political leaders had been in World War II or even World War I.
Now, of course, there has been now experience of Canada in Afghanistan, a different kind of conflict in Libya. With those two lessons for Canadians in mind, where does Mali situate on that spectrum?
Nowhere at all, I would imagine. I mean, Libya is full of oil. Mali is one of the most bankrupt countries in the world. And I have to be very honest with you, I don't think Afghanistan was a smashing military success for Canada. It was good training for Canadian troops, and they're much nicer than the American troops, but I don't think it was a major national interest for Canada, apart from showing its alliance with the United States.
But the question then is, what do you do? I mean, you know, when Robert Fowler would look at you and say, do you let an Islamist al-Qaeda-related group take over the West African country of Mali, where Canada has contributed over $100 million in aid, and other, what do you say to him?
I say that Mali is a civil war. It is not an Islamist war. And at the end of the day, unfortunately, that is what the French are going to find out. What we should be doing now is not saying, what do we do now? We should be spotting the monsters we're feeding who are going to pop up in the future, in Tajikistan, Kazakhstan, the new Saddams, whom we are now encouraging to become dictators, because later we're going to have to invade them to stop another Islamist uprising. We're never looking more than 24 hours in front, or several weeks, according to the French foreign minister. That's a problem.
And we are back here on Warning Shots on CKUW 95.9 FM. And Warning Shots is CKUW's independent international news show. And right now I'm joined by Derek O'Keefe on the line. He's the editor of Rabble.ca. He's also a writer and social justice activist based in Vancouver, BC. Hello, Derek. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks for having me on, Scott.
Yes, thanks. And now, thank you for coming on to talk about Mali and this current situation and sort of how Canadian foreign policy fits into all this. Now, let's begin. Now, Canada has sent a C-17 transport aircraft to support France and the African Union troops on the ground in Mali. So, do you agree that Canada should be helping out in this intervention in Mali?
No, I don't agree with it. And, I guess the starting point is just that there was zero debate in either in Canadian society, much less in the House of Commons, prior to Stephen Harper and his government announcing this latest military intervention or support. What it really is military support to the French-led intervention. This was just announced, and of course it started off by saying we're just going to lend one plane for 1 week. And then a week later, yesterday, we had the official announcement that Canada will be involved for 1 month. So starts with a week, goes to a month, and we can imagine a year or more and on. And, this is definitely mission creep, as they say, and it should concern everyone in Canada that we're involved in yet another foreign military adventure. And we've seen where that went so wrong in Afghanistan. So many people, so many Canadians died needlessly, I would say. And having a lot of blood on the Canadian government's hands for its intervention in Afghanistan with so many thousands killed and tortured, displaced, and leaving Afghanistan worse than when Canada found it. So the big concern, Mali is part of a very unstable region, and this conflict in Mali, we see already the connections with Algeria, and with other countries in the region. So we risk putting fuel on the fire, and I don't think Canada should have anything to do with it.
Now, let's start with your first point about the lack of any kind of debate, you said, in broader Canadian society and the House of Commons. Now, this seems to be something, I mean, when... I think there was maybe a parliamentary talk about the original mission in Afghanistan, but there certainly was nothing on Canada's involvement in Libya. I think all the parties basically signed on to it, I think, other than Elizabeth May, who I think voted against it. Why should that be so troubling to Canadians? Because, I mean, it's usually people are more worried about taxes or the economy and not foreign policy. Why should Canadians pay attention to foreign policy?
Well, foreign policy is part of domestic policy. Every cent that goes to a fighter jet or a bomb or to so-called aid abroad, which now under the Harper government is literally aid to the operations of Canadian mining companies that are working in so many of these countries. There's been a big shift in Canadian aid policy, which also hasn't been discussed enough, but every cent spent abroad is a cent, and money not spent on the urgent social needs here at home, housing on First Nations communities, would be top of mind given the events of the last couple of months. But aside from dollars and cents, these are issues of politics and morality, and just, the Canadian military has no right to intervene and be part of these broader NATO mission to control and dominate poorer countries in the rest of the world. And in fact, in Afghanistan, just going back, there was no debate when the Liberal government under Paul Martin announced the shift of Canada's mission to Kandahar, mm-hmm. where Canada was part of leading the counterinsurgency. That was just done by Martin and his cabinet and the military. And Libya, unfortunately, yes, it was. The initial intervention was endorsed by everyone except Elizabeth May of the Green MPs. The NDP later moved to call for an end to that mission in Libya. But what we're seeing right now in Mali is directly related to the NATO intervention in Libya. And I would argue the groups, the militias that were supposedly going in now with France to take out in northern Mali would not have achieved what they've achieved in northern Mali if the war against Libya and the regime change in Libya hadn't happened. So this is a direct blowback from an intervention that happened just last year. And, you know, Canadians need to be informed about this. They need to know that the interventions we're part of today have effects tomorrow and that these things are all related. So, it's an across-the-board issue, a bigger issue that foreign policy is not seriously debated, and we don't often hear dissenting views in the mainstream media anyway.
Yeah, now, I mean, that connection to Libya, I think we should touch on that. But first, and I found it interesting when the whole thing with Libya came on that, you know, Elizabeth May giving her credit for saying no to that. But it was interesting to see the Liberals and the NDP, specifically the NDP, coming up and just saying, well, yes. And even from what I've heard, I mean, I could be wrong unless something has changed since what I've last been following. But even Mulcair said, well, okay, he didn't come out and say anything against the intervention. He said, well, we'll have to see how it goes and what kind of mandate we can have. So it's very interesting that even the NDP, a party that you would nominally think might be anti-intervention, it seems to be going along with it with as far as this track record goes of the last in Mali and in Libya. It's kind of an interesting thing. What is your thoughts on that, about the NDP's position?
Well, first, on my understanding on what the NDP has said about Mali, there's been very little said, but my understanding is they went along with the initial one-week announcement from Harper about the mm-hmm. C-17 and said, we'll keep tabs on this. But yesterday, I heard nothing dissenting from the NDP or other opposition parties about this being extended to 1 month. And one report I read went so far as to say that Mulcair had indicated support for the French bombing as well, but I haven't been able to confirm that myself. But it's all related to the lack of a broad discussion in Canadian society, because if you remember back in 2006 when Jack Layton and the NDP came out with, you know, a clear position of withdrawing troops from Afghanistan, and Layton's position was to negotiate, you know, Canada should push for negotiations to end the war. And for taking that stand right across the board in many of the big papers, Layton was mocked and the Conservatives labeled him Taliban Jack and so forth. And so there was this huge attack against the leader of then the third party just for saying what is now a clear majority of Canadian opinion that, you know, we should end the war in Afghanistan. So, you know, just to say these are the pressures that all the political opposition parties operate under, not to excuse their failures to take to raise objections to what's going on. And, you know, a similar story has played out in France. We should say the leading country in going into Mali, the former slave and colonial power, you know, the people who enforced slavery and colonialism in Mali for so long. And, you know, this whole region of the world is impoverished and marginalized, largely because it was looted and plundered for the slave trade, where, you know, tens of millions of its inhabitants were stolen and kidnapped and shipped away for the profits of empire. So all of that context, to say that in France today, very few voices on the French left, and in France there are communists and socialists and social democrats, many of them in the parliament, and very few have objected.
Yeah,
in the assembly, rather, in the French National Assembly, there's been very little.
Yeah, very little talk. Now, in talking more about the situation in Mali, and as you put it, it was blowback. So, explain how the intervention and the toppling of Muammar Gaddafi ties into this situation in Mali.
Sure. Well, Muammar Gaddafi was a thug, and there were many problems with his regime, but he switched sides throughout his long career as the dictator of Libya. And, you know, his base of support was very different to the people who have now occupied power and who joined with NATO in removing him. A removal, which we should just say, for all the problems with Gaddafi, his removal was illegal, even in the terms of the UN resolution that was brought forward. There was never supposed to be a regime change mission in Libya. NATO just did that. And, you know, Canada and the US and France and the UK just did that. They just removed and murdered Gaddafi in an extrajudicial, an assassination, really, a lynching. So all that to say, that the groups that NATO was working with are, you know, many of them linked to Al-Qaeda historically, or the network, so-called, with groups like-minded to Al-Qaeda, fundamentalist groups, various militias, tribal militias. And in the fallout of the regime change in Libya, many of these groups were armed like never before. And so a lot of those people and organizations and weapons have gone to northern Mali, which is a sparsely populated region. There's the Tuareg people who've been fighting their own battle for independence in northern Mali and other countries of the region for a long time. Mm-hmm. But now there's also, there's new militias and groups, you know, supposedly linked to Al-Qaeda or like-minded with Islamic fundamentalists, now have tremendous weaponry at their disposal, and by all reports have been committing a lot of crimes against the people in northern Mali. So, and, you know, my contention and a lot of other observers have said that this situation never would have developed as it has if the Gaddafi regime hadn't been overthrown by NATO and its allies. And to show how it's connected, now Canadian government is issuing travel advisories and other Western governments saying, advising citizens not to go to Benghazi, which is the city in eastern Libya where the rebellion against Gaddafi started, where the intervention had its first beachhead. And of course, this is where, you know, the U.S. ambassador was murdered, was killed by a group of Islamists. Well, we don't know all the details of why they did that, but that was also part of the blowback of the war on Libya. So now, where we're told Canada was liberating Libya, Canadians cannot, it's not safe for them to go to Libya. People are getting, you know, hostages are being taken in Algeria by some of these same groups who are upset that France is bombing Mali. You know, and many people were killed in the hostage taking in Algeria. So this is all related. And as I said, I think the French bombing and the broader intervention is fuel on the fire here. Mm-hmm. Canadians should be really concerned about stepping into this wider military conflict.
Yeah. And I mean, you're talking about, you know, certainly the Islamic groups in the north are, there's certainly quite a bit to say that they've done some pretty dubious and horrible things. But even from Amnesty International, I mean, the government in Mali and the government forces there that we're supporting are also guilty of some pretty horrible crimes. I mean, it was even Robert Fisk on CBC saying that, you know, they were essentially shooting or killing the Tuareg people specifically just because they were Tuareg, nothing to do with anything else, right? So, I mean, that's also the complicated nature in that you say, you know, how this is built up and being a fight versus good and evil. We're also on the side of the government in Mali, who are also implicit in war crimes.
And, of course, it doesn't often get mentioned, but the current government in Mali is the result of a coup d'etat that happened last spring, and then another sort of a coup within the coup in December. So this is not democratic government. This is not a government with broad legitimacy in Mali that is, you know, that the French and Canada and others are intervening to supposedly protect. And this is just sort of typical of the region. Just to give one example, there's a lot of countries that border Mali. It's a landlocked country in Western Africa. If your listeners, you'll have to consult. It's good to look at a map and just see the complexity of the region. But right to the south of Mali is Burkina Faso. And Burkina Faso has essentially a dictatorship that's been in power for 25 years since the Western-backed coup. And Blaise Compaoré is the leader there. Last year, or 2 years ago, when the Arab Spring was happening, there was also a democratic uprising and protests and movement happening in Burkina Faso. Canada's government, the United States, France, none of them went to the aid or made a big deal about this people's movement in Burkina Faso to try to bring democracy to Burkina Faso, because they work very closely with the Compaoré government in Burkina Faso. They have a lot of mining interests that are looked after by this regime in that country and many others. So just one example that there are many other human rights abusers in the region that are closely backed by the West and have all kinds of corporate projects underway, many of which are mining projects that Canada is involved in. There's a number of Canadian mining companies that have operations or stakes in Mali, so Canada doesn't want to lose those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Canadian government anyway, which does the bidding of mining companies abroad. The current Harper government actually shot down a bill a couple of years ago that was designed to make Canadian mining companies accountable for human rights and environmental conditions. What they did is to human rights and in the environment abroad. Mm-hmm. Right now, Canada is a huge center for mining investment because companies that operate out of Canada are essentially unaccountable for what they do in poor countries like Mali, and, all throughout Africa, Latin America, and large parts of Asia as well.
Yeah. Now, I mean, it was like when you say the complexity of the region, I mean, that's very true, and how it connects to Libya and then the overall context, right? I mean, of this thing with the Tuareg in the north. I mean, that's been going on since, the 1880s, really. So these are longstanding issues. So obviously it's complicated and it's not a perfect world. So, you say you don't want intervention, but I mean, then what is the solution? Is it just sort of sitting back and saying, well, we got to let this kind of work itself out? Like, what is the position if it's not intervention? Then what, if not intervention, then what is the solution? Because obviously this is not a very good situation for, in the case of a very horrible situation for many people in the region. There's starvation, there's massive humanitarian crisis outside of even this conflict. So what, if not intervention, then what should be done?
Yeah, there's often this argument that gets made by advocates of so-called humanitarian intervention, or whenever they need to justify a military intervention, that, well, you have to do something. Well, they're the ones limiting the discussion to a military intervention led by Canada, France, and these other big powerful countries. There's all kinds of other foreign policy and economic and political tools that can be brought to bear when there are human rights abuses in the world. We think of Israel and Palestine. We all know that Israel is committing great injustices and occupying West Bank and punishing Gaza with a blockade, but nobody advocates for a military intervention by Canada or the United Nations against Israel, because they know that wouldn't happen given the balance of power in the world. So people advocate for a boycott, cutting off military aid, stopping trade deals that benefit Israel's occupation in the West Bank. There's all kinds of these other tools that can be advocated for, and I think that's where we have to keep the focus. So there's a number of things, but the first would be Canada should support the struggle of the Tuareg people in the north. They should be putting pressure on the government of Mali to hold fair democratic elections and to stop human rights abuses. Canada should be, in general, just completely transforming its trade relationships with countries in Africa to end hundreds of years of neo-colonial relationship. They should be, as I said, making sure that any Canadian mining companies operating in Africa or elsewhere are subject to very strict regulation and oversight in terms of their labor conditions, human rights, and environmental abuses. But as we have it right now, everything's backwards. And the other thing would be direct Canadian military support or arms sales to a lot of these regimes. A lot of people don't know that the number one recipient of Canadian weaponry and other arms is, after the United States, because we don't count weapons we ship to the United States as exports. Mm-hmm. The number one recipient of Canadian military exports is Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. probably the biggest human rights violator possibly in the world. You know, just an absolutely horrific regime in power there that beheads people on a regular basis, public executions, total, you know, no rights for women in Saudi Arabia. Anyway, I mean, I'm moving around, but there's all kinds of these regimes that Canada is arming, has trade deals and gives political support to that we should be reversing that entirely. So, I mean, that's the kind of intervention I think we should be talking about, where they always try to frame it narrowly as a military intervention in whatever country they're interested in today.
Mm-hmm. Now, kind of the final thing is about we're talking a bit about Canadian foreign policy, and I think a lot of people have said, that there's a shift in Canadian foreign policy over the last decade, right, with Afghanistan, since the war in Afghanistan, well, the ongoing thing, conflict, is that we've moved from being a peacekeeper to a force that will fight wars, and now in Libya was said to be a great success in terms of is what the military and the government said, and now in Mali. So, do you agree with that? This intervention in Mali is part of a overall shift in Canadian foreign policy to more to war rather than the previous role of being a peacekeeper.
I mean, I think that's all true. There's a shift that Harper is trying to carry out and has in many ways already successfully. You know, I remember his first major interview with Peter Mansbridge after he became prime minister in 2006. The issue of Afghanistan came up, and he said very clearly that the fact that Canada was killing and being killed in Afghanistan was making the Canadian military better. That was his view. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. But my read of that was that Harper didn't care what country we were intervening in. The point was that Canada was involved in a war. Military was, you know, toughening up and getting used to counterinsurgency. So I do think Mali is part of that continuum, part of that push that Harper's trying to carry out. But I actually think there are limits on this. For one thing, morale in the Canadian Army is much lower than they would have you believe. I hear from people who are close with Canadian soldiers who have been in Afghanistan, many coming back with PTSD, or severe injuries, or have friends that died in Afghanistan, and there's not a strong desire to amongst the troops. There's less morale for another type of intervention like Afghanistan. Because I think the men and women who serve in the Canadian military can see that nothing was achieved in Afghanistan, or that they were, probably some of them can see that they were sent, on a pack of lies to occupy another people's country. So I don't think that Canada right now can launch another operation on the scale of Afghanistan. So I think Harper is doing as much as he can in the case of Mali. And at this point, they are just being asked to play a supporting role. You know, one transport plane, a few dozen troops to help coordinate that. But as these things go, there will be a potential to get dragged deeper into the situation.
Mm, yeah, and potentially a situation much like Afghanistan that really doesn't have much of an end in sight, right? Like, because it's, as we've said, I mean, you can sort of see the parallel into the complexity of the issue in Mali, like the complexity in the issue in Afghanistan. So that's, I guess that certainly is a fair point, right?
Just to bring it up to speed on Afghanistan, I mean, everyone acknowledges, Harper at one point even had to say, you're never going to militarily have a full solution in Afghanistan. There's no way NATO, no matter how many people they bomb and kill and how many drones they have buzzing around in the skies, can control that country. I don't see it happening. So right now they're sticking around and killing people in order to find a face-saving exit and some modicum of a stable government that will still be somewhat friendly with the West. But observers across the political spectrum acknowledge that Afghanistan has been a disaster. So at a minimum, I think that voices that were critical of Canada going into Afghanistan in the first place should be given more prominence in the discussion in Canada around Mali. Unfortunately, the people who are wrong about Afghanistan, people like Harper who are wrong about Iraq, going back even further, those are the people dominating the public discourse about Mali. And that has to change.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Derek, for coming on and explaining this whole situation and the kind of the broader discussion of Canadian foreign policy. It's something like, as you touched upon, and also that I've covered quite a bit in the show, is that it's not talked about enough. And then I think it's too much of Canadians always thinking we're just pulling hanging on to the coat of the bully, wherein, you know, we just sort of go along with the United States, wherein, you know, that's not the case. And that's kind of a whitewashing of how important Canadian foreign policy actually is, and how that discussion is important for Canadians in general. So thank you for coming on and talking about all this. And sure. Yeah. And then so you write for Rabble. So where can people get some of your writings and maybe some of more of your thoughts on Canadian foreign policy and the situation in Mali?
Sure. I was just going to say Canada is a bully in its own right now, unfortunately. We have to face up to that reality and stop our government's bullying of people all over the world. So I would encourage your listeners definitely check out Rabble.ca. We've had several articles about Mali, and we have another one today going up by Roger Annis. Mm-hmm. Who wrote an earlier piece and putting some of this in historical context. And it's hard to explain it, even given the 15, 20 minutes that you gave me on the radio. It requires people to read and do their own research and look into this, and then, you know, encourage everyone to contact their politicians, contact your local media, and demand a higher level of discussion and debate about what Canada's up to in West Africa right now, because it's serious stuff going to have implications for the future.
Yes. Yes. Well. Yeah. Exactly. And I do encourage people, like you said, to go and research and dig into these issues. So, thank you again, Derek, for coming on.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Bye. Yes. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Derek O'Keefe of Rabble. He's the editor there at Rabble.ca. So there's a couple of pretty good articles if you go to Rabble that I kind of read. CBC had some good stuff as well. I believe the title of the article on CBC was, you know, what is Canada's role? And it's actually quite lengthy, and it talks about some of this stuff. So that's good. That's a place to start. There is one of the ones that Derek O'Keefe, one of the articles that he had was links to other good articles one really great article is by Glenn Greenwald, if you can find, on Mali, to put some of the stuff in more of a broader context. There was also a couple weeks ago I gave some of my analysis of what was going on in Mali 2 or 3 weeks ago. But if you go to ckw.ca, you can find all of that. Yeah, that was the January 4th show. I gave some of my thoughts on Mali and sort of this context of the whole coup and how, you know, that has kind of fallen by the wayside, about how this increased militarization has kind of created the coup and this whole instability to begin with under the auspices of AFRICOM. So, you know, there's all those things to really think about and put together. And, you know, and I think just in general, I mean, whether or not you think it's a good thing or a bad thing or whatever you think about this, I think Canadian foreign policy is something that needs to be discussed far more than it is. And like I said, I think it's always a whitewash when we say, well, you just follow the Americans. We're pulling on the hanging on to the bully's coat. I think that's a whitewash. It's certainly not true now. I would argue, as others like Eve Angler have argued, that has never been the case. Canada, to say that Canada has always acted in altruistic terms is completely ludicrous, in my opinion. But we're going to go for a little break. So we're gonna hear some music. We're going to hear a couple of tracks here. The Menaha Street Band, which they were the backing band for Charles Bradley, if you know the great soul singer from Daptones. So we're going to hear a track from them. And so this is your chance to phone in questions, comments, concerns, all that kind of stuff. So I welcome that, as well as there'll be a quick message as well. So if you want to give a call when the music's on, 774-6877, questions, comments, or concerns, or if you'd like to pre-pledge to the show, because CKW Fund Drive is coming up. So that's all coming up. You can give a call, 204 877-674-6877.
Time for a CETA myth-busting fact from the Council of Canadians.
Harper's myth: CETA would not prevent Canada's municipal governments from sourcing goods and services locally.
CETA fact: the procurement rules in CETA will prohibit any covered government or public agency from preferring one bidding firm over another based on the amount of Canadian or local content in the goods or services being offered.
Call your MLA. Go to Canadians.org for more information.
So simple.
Yes, and we are back. This is Warning Shots on CKAW 95.9 FM. Warning Shots is CKAW's independent international news show. I'm your host, Scott Price. You just heard some tracks off the Menahan Street Band. Their debut recording called The Crossing, all sort of instrumental funk kind of stuff. They were, if you pick up Charles Bradley's debut record, what's the name of that record? I forget. Anyways, Charles Bradley's first record, he has a new one out of like ballads and stuff. But the first one, they were the backing band for him. But that was so some tracks off of their new record. I heard the songs Sleight of Hand and The Crossing off the new album The Crossing. So go pick that up. It's on Daptones. So if it's Daptones, it's usually good. So on today's show, you heard a live interview with Derek O'Keefe from Rabble.ca about the situation in Mali and Canada's involvement, and we talked about Canadian foreign policy. So there you go, there's all that. Yeah, so now closing out the show, questions, comments, or concerns. There's a couple ways that you can do that, and we always like hearing feedback from listeners. Now, the office phone number, 204-786-9782. You can also email me, warningshots.ckuw959@gmail.com. Email our news director, Michael Welsh, ckuwnews@rocketmail.com. Or follow me on Twitter, @warningshots. You can get a hold of me there. Or I also suggest you follow CKAW on Twitter @CKAW to find out what's going on at this fine little station that we have here. And and just a reminder, the next couple weeks, Fund Drive is coming up. So, you know, start thinking about pledging and how much you want to pledge and supporting the station, because it is so important and it's a big part of what we do, of being listener driven. We need that support from the community. That's definitely, you know, it's a reciprocal thing, right? We provide this, our programmers, our volunteers, you know, produce this radio either through music or spoken word programming to you, and then for you to enjoy, and then it's sort of a reciprocal thing of then we ask for you to support us with your donations, because it is so important. Now, so that's the end of the show. I will be on, of course, next week. I will be here. Not entirely sure what I'm going to be covering. There's a couple things I've been following, but remember to come back and tune in Friday at 1 o'clock next week to hear Warning Shots. I will be with you again. And of course, coming up next is the Community Cupboard, and then you have your great show called Mercy of Slumber. And then there's Now Sounds, and of course, Pig City Groove. So you don't want to you don't want to go anywhere. It's all on CKAW, right? CKAW 95.9 FM through the whole Friday afternoon. So keep it locked here. And Scott Price for Warning Shots signing off. Have a great and safe weekend, and I'll talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.
Grab yourself a pen and some paper. It's time for CKAW's Community Cupboard. Announcements and resources from and in your community. If you have a public service announcement or community resource to share, contact us at 786-9782 or email ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca.
Yes, and here is your Community Cupboard for today. Okay, so there's winter programs going on at the Wellness Institute. So all sorts of different things happening through the winter. Of course, it's the time of year where, you know, you might be inside too much. It's always good to get some physical activity. So at Access River East, 975 Henderson Highway, the most recent one is January the 29th to March the 5th, 9:30 to 12. There's also other places, the North End Wellness Center, 636 McGregor Street, starting in February. So for all this sort of, for more information on the classes and what they do, contact the Wellness Institute at 204-632-3927 or visit the website www.wellnessinstitute.com.